and welcome to the Special Ed Strategist podcast, brought to you by Learning Essentials. Learning Essentials offers special education-based support, educational therapy, academic therapy, and IEP coaching by state-certified educators with advanced degrees in all areas of special education. The Special Ed Strategist podcast brings professionals together to educate and empower families navigating special education needs and the IEP process.
Welcome to the Special Ed Strategist podcast, the pod that offers all things special ed. I am your host, Wendy Taylor, helping parents and professionals bridge learning gaps and build kick-butt IEPs is my passion. If you want more tips, show us some love on social at Learning Essentials. If you are new to our podcast, give us a like and a follow. Today, we are talking teacher shortages, specifically in the world of special education and how this impacts free and appropriate education, IEPs, and educational services. Today, we are joined by the special education boss, Karen Mayer Cunningham. She has been advocating on behalf of children for 25 plus years. Her unlikely journey as an advocate began in an effort to get needed services for her own son, but along the way, found a calling to share the resources she has discovered. Karen is relentless in getting the services and resources for children so that they can succeed. It's only about successful student outcomes. Karen, I am so excited for our conversation today. It is such a pleasure to have you on in such a timely fashion to have this conversation as students across the United States, some have started school, some are getting ready to start school. And I know parents have a lot of questions about special education and the shortage of teachers, specifically special educators, and how that will impact their kiddo in the classroom and services. So I'm excited for us to chat about this conversation and hopefully answer some questions for parents that are really curious and concerned about what this year is going to look like for their babies.
Absolutely. I'm excited to be here and have this conversation.
You bet. So I have to ask, how did you come up with your title, Special Ed Boss?
You know, I can't remember her name, but I took a little online course. I think it was $27, how to name anything. And it's really important if you have a business for it to be very clear what it is. A lot of advocates will say Smith Consultative Services, but this is pretty clear about who I am and what I do.
Exactly. And you know that when you hear Special Ed Boss, that good things are happening.
Yes, always.
So how did you get into the line of special education and being a special ed boss?
Sure. So I was not planning on being in special education, or I was always planning on being the boss. I wanted to be popular. That's very different than effective. And so if you want to be unpopular, be a special education advocate. Often that is the how it shows up. I had a child, my first child, when he was three, we started him in, used to be called PPTD, Preschool Preparation for Children with Disabilities. And I thought, this is fantastic. He's speech delayed. We just send him to school where people love children. They're really smart. They finish college. This is going to be fantastic. Went and bought him a Lion King backpack. I guess that's what you do. Threw in a Lunchable and sent him on his way. And I thought, this is going to be paradise. And about a month into it, or a few weeks into it, I was at a salon at a resort. And my husband called me. And because I'm also a stand-up comic, he said, I'm not kidding. There is a woman here from Child Protective Services at our door. And she wants to ask you some questions. Well, it's not really a good intro to a phone call. And she said that we had been reported for doing something to our child because he rocks and chews on his fingers. And do we think that's normal? And I said, I don't think that's normal. She said, do you think it's normal that he does this? And she listed all of these things and said, no, no, no. Well, that's what your husband said too. And then she gave me a brochure where I could come see him if they took him into custody. So that was my intro into special education. And I didn't know what was going on. So I went across to the school and I, you know, like a lunatic, and they all looked at me like I was a lunatic, and I let it go. I think I even bought her a Christmas gift because that's what you're supposed to do. And then in January, there was another phone call. And so I decided that this lovely German Irish lady was not having that. So I went to the CPS office and I said, I was rolling my cart full of papers. He'd been in special ed for about 6 months. And I said, do you know anything about autism? And the girl, who might've been 22 years old, she just left college. She goes, I think when I was a sophomore, we had a seminar. And I was like, are you my leader? She was the first person to ever give me a resource. And she gave me a card for MHMR of Travis County, mental health, mental retardation. We don't say that anymore. And it was the first time somebody had resourced me. I thought, how odd that nobody's ever given me a resource. And fast forward, that was in 1997, 25 years later, it's just the same thing. It's sort of the secret. We can't tell anybody anything. And it's just craziness. Even now teachers will say to a parent, hi, Ms. Smith, your kiddo needs support. Your kiddo needs this. He needs testing. But don't say, I told you.
As a previous special educator in a classroom, I am always a special educator, but a previous special ed, there was many a times that I'd had conversations with parents and saying, this is do X, Y, and Z.
Right.
But it wasn't from me. And that's terrible. It's terrible.
And when you explain it to somebody who's not in special ed, it doesn't even sound right.
No.
It sounds like you're making it up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So absolutely. And I think we need to do better by our families. We need to do better by the students that we support in and out of the classroom to help better prepare them for future education, employment, and independence. And so that is why you and I are joining this conversation today. How do you see the shortage of special ed teachers impacting services for students with IEPs?
So I think that's a really good question. I call it the blessing and the curse of COVID. I think the good thing about COVID was it made all of us get to work, including parents, right? I think parents sometimes are the outlier and need to stay out of it. It equipped parents to help teach their kiddo with disabilities. And we could see teachers that were doing amazing things, right? And we got that opportunity to replicate that because COVID with online, I call it, we got to peek over the fence, right? I think the curse of COVID is we realized that this broken system is a little more broken than we thought. And I think that we realized that what we thought we were getting, we weren't getting. And so I think the shortage of teachers, period, is twofold. I think that the education system has to be revamped, and I think this is going to require it. Unfortunately, we don't train general ed or special education teachers as it relates to the law or special education. And special education teachers need the most help. They just do. And they get the least help. And I know amazing special education teachers, probably 20% of my clients are school-based members who have to have an advocate. Yesterday, I had an IEP meeting for somebody who's the instructional officer for a school district over 100,000 people because they're not listening to her in her own district. And so it's so unfortunate. We have special education teachers who love children. Unfortunately, we didn't train them on anything special education and the law or how it relates to the application of doing their job legally. And so what's happened with all of this social media and all this awareness is that teachers, the pressure is too much and they're underappreciated. They're not given materials. They're not trained. They're certainly not monetized in a way that would make you want to stay in that vocation for the load that they have, right? We have to do better. We have to pay this profession a professional fee. And I don't know why special education teachers would stay if they're not supported by school districts. And we have some great school districts that do that, but most of them are just out there swimming alone, doing the best that they can.
Yeah. And I always felt like as a special education teacher, you wear a ton of hats, but it is really a split position because you have your caseload, the paperwork, data, and then you have the in-classroom support, teacher support. So there's a lot going into that. So you're absolutely right. What can parents be on the lookout for as they're entering this school year, as they're thinking ahead, or they have an IEP or thinking about getting an IEP, what should they be looking out for or asking?
Sure. So if you're thinking that your child might need support, which is something more than a general education teacher would provide, you're going to send a very simple email to the school. This is my formal request for my son to have special education testing, areas of suspected disability or learning, attention, and language issues. I look forward to coming in and signing notice and consent. Easy peasy. You don't have to send them something from, you know, the Dead Sea Scrolls with federal content in it. Just send that. The parents are the expert. Case law will tell you they're the expert. You need to lean into when there's a deficit, when your child's not in the normed range, whether it's communicative, functional, behavior, emotional, and academic, you have to lean into that. You're going to be the one driving it. Does the law say that the school refers kiddos for special education testing and they go knocking on doors? Yes, I haven't seen that happen yet. You're going to be the one that has to trigger that. Additionally, you need to make sure that you stay on top of that. Parents go into schools, they're patted on the head and it's fine. You know, he's a boy. I heard this last week. Fourth grade boys don't like to write. Is that like a study you did? Like that was like 10 years at Harvard? And they just shoo you away. And what happens is if we're not on top of that by second or third grade, it's going to be hard to reverse. Because kiddos are set. If you've ever seen a pack of three-year-olds, you can tell what they're going to be as grown-ups, right? And we send parents away and say, that's fine. It's developmental. It's not fine. If they're out of the average range, I'm going to ask for that evaluation. And the evaluation is going to lead me to one of three conclusions. My student does not have a disability and does not need extra support at school. Thank goodness. Number two, my child does have a disability and does need support at school, called a 504. Fantastic. Let's write that plan. Or my child does have a disability is in need of an individualized education program. And we write that plan with supports and services and goals so that they can be successful and access the classroom in the same way their peers do.
I like how you said you added the functional, behavioral, and emotional component, because a lot of families that I've spoken to feel like, well, it's not learning specifically. However, we all know that those functional, behavioral, and emotional impact learning. And so they'll say, you know, the school said that they don't have a learning need, even though it's behavior related or something of that nature. So it is important for parents to realize that we're looking at the whole child and right. every little facet of that so that they can access their education, they can access their learning.
Right. And I think what's important about that, Wendy, is what we say to parents, which sounds right, is that there is no academic need and he hasn't been to the principal's office. Well, going to the principal's yes. office was what got you an IEP. I would have gotten one during Watergate. So, and here's the thing about grades. I don't believe your grades. I don't believe if your child's a valedictorian, I don't believe you. Because teachers are demanded that every child is going to pass. And if they have to give you the test 42 times, you're getting it. Probably in the last 4 years, I haven't seen a child fail. So the language that you want to stick and stay on is it's not an academic need. You're looking for an educational need. And that could be anything from dressing and undressing to eating, to walking, to speaking, to academic work, emotional, behavioral, all of those things in the way that we show up in life.
100%. So what are some red flags that may indicate to a parent that their child is not getting the services on their IEP?
So the red flag is, are they making expected progress? You know, we were supposed to write an IEP for a student since 2017. We've identified their unique circumstances and that they're going to make progress. So at the end of each grading period, I have my parents request the raw data collection sheets, RDCS, which makes people flop on the floor and roll around. Raw data collection sheets, right? Because you either collected data or you didn't, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. The reason we collect data is twofold. If it's working, keep doing it. And if it's not, we make adjustments. It's not personal. This is business. It is the business of educating individuals with disabilities. That's it. It's nothing else. So in the meeting, I'm going to say to Miss Cindy, hey, I'm so glad that you're here. Do you want darker milk chocolate this year? I'm going to partner with you. And I do it on the front end. I'm going to go in, I call it the Zach Pack. And I'm going to give you a printout. I'm going to say, he is amazing. He is going to manipulate you like this. If you call dad, he doesn't care. If you say you call me, he'll be terrified. I'm going to tell that teacher here his strengths and his needs. I'm going to offer her a copy of his IEP goals. I'm going to offer her a copy of his accommodations. Why? Because the teacher may or may not have received that, and it might be somewhere in her email. I want her to know who my child is and partner with her so that we can have successful student outcomes. And so I'm going to tell her, just so you know, at the end of the first 9 weeks, I'm going to pick up the raw data collection sheets from the teachers and the service providers. Do you want to make photocopies or do you want me to bring you a floppy disk or an 8-track tape player? What's easier for you, right? So that we're working together. And then I'm also going to say to her, listen, if you see something that he's working on or struggling with, I want to partner with you. If you have a strategy that you're teaching him that's working, let me know so that we're replicating that. It's a whole team that serves one student.
That's right. And parents are every bit a part of that team and having that input 100%. What do you recommend to parents? Two parts. One, if they do not receive that raw data collection sheet and trying to hold my thoughts on that one, or they say, you know, oh, we can't share that with you, would be the first part. And well, I guess go ahead and answer that and I'll ask the second part.
Well, if that happens, you know, I'm going to have to make a TikTok state law. So if they said that silliness, well, first of all, I would tell them when I have that meet and greet, the blank raw data collection sheets sit inside the software that your school uses to write the IEP. Of course, I'm going to be able to look at that because that's one of my procedural rights, that the parents have the right to look at and review their child's educational product. And of course, we're going to find out what that is because that's how we make progress and know that he's moving forward. So not giving me that, not an option. That's usually going to determine at that point whether the teacher knows that she's required to take data. And at that point, I'm all for, we're in the same team. Please collect data. I'm sure that your special ed lead will show you how to fill up these sheets. So I come from a place of, yes, we're going to work together. I don't do that. I'm allergic. I don't do that. I don't know what that means.
No, right. We can do this together. Absolutely. Yes. So I have heard some parents share with me and also other professionals, educators, that on their IEP, for example, they have written direct reading instruction. However, because of not having the staffing, their child or a student in their building is not receiving it. What are some steps or actions that families should take if the school tells them or they find out due to a teacher shortage or lack of funds, they can't provide some services?
So I always tee it up. I try to talk in a way people can see. So if I said to you, you know what, Wendy, I know that your son's supposed to have insulin twice a day, but we are busy, Wendy. You understand, right? COVID, all the things. So we're just going to do it on Tuesdays. That's okay, right, Wendy? No. So an educational benefit is as important as a medical benefit. So I understand you have a teacher shortage. I absolutely understand if you can't deliver his IP. So we'll look at compensatory time from somebody private to mitigate the impact of your shortage and to return the student back to where he would be if the IDEA violation hadn't occurred. You having people or not having people has nothing to do with the legal requirement, duties, and responsibilities. You will be implementing the totality of his IEP so that you can confer a FAPE. This is going to be fantastic. When I work with people, it's all great. Whatever it is, it's great. It's great. It's great. But if somebody said, I wasn't giving your child your medicine every day, you wouldn't go, okay, Bob, they're short on people. No, you would be up there with your robe on, with your hair in a towel in the front office. This is your child. This is going to make him successful for the next 3/4 of his life or not. The prison population is mostly identified students with disabilities, learning disabilities, reading disabilities. So it is the most important thing that the totality of his IEP is implemented. Otherwise, we can also look at private placement. I'm all about options. Not doing it, not one of them.
It's not a choice. It's not a choice. Options. That's right. And having this for parents really empowers them. And I love the visual analogy of that because you're absolutely right. If my son wasn't receiving the medication that he needed, I would be up there with my hair curlers on, ready to like have this conversation because it's not okay. And that's the same thing with direct instruction, reading, however that may be, that you have the right to have this. So how can schools make sure they are meeting IEP requirements?
So I think, you know, I do a lot of professional development across the nation and I love school-based members. There has to be some requirement from the top down that we've given some basic training to the teachers of record. Because the persons that are required to implement the IEP are not the principal. They're not somebody that came from district to wrangle me in a meeting. It's the teachers, special ed teachers, and the related service providers. Their requirements under 504, OCR, ADA, Title II, and IDEA. They're kind of simple components. You fill out an accommodations log, has to be filled out every day, for every child that has an accommodation. And their IEP goals have to be populated when you work on implementing that IEP goal once a week. There's a lot of pushback because people aren't trained. It's a very simple process. But unfortunately, teachers get their information from the other teacher in the lunchroom and the other teacher. And if you were never taught, you're shocked when I show up and ask for you to implement and collect data.
You mentioned the phrase teacher of record. Can you explain what that means for people that may be listening and aren't sure?
Sure. So if a student with a disability is in language arts in general ed, and there's a special education teacher in there supporting him as well, the teacher of record is the general education teacher. The special education teacher in the general ed class supports the general education teacher. If a student is receiving instruction during language arts in a special education location, then the special ed teacher is the teacher of record and the general education teacher supports them. So they're always working in tandem to make sure that we are getting as close as possible to those state standards, to those goals, that they support each other.
What are some creative solutions that you have seen either individual educators or schools or school districts use to better support our students that have IEPs or 504s?
Right. So I've seen so many amazing things. We have so many schools that really think outside of the box. I think one of the most creative things that I've seen, which is maybe not the answer you're looking for, is that they've really gotten the parents involved, right? If you really get the parents involved, it is the eighth pillar of IDEA, parent participation. Parents are to be part of the evaluation, the IEP development, and placement. And if you can get the parents involved, they have the keys to the kingdom about their kiddo. They know how they're cooked. And when we get all of those team members together, how we can serve Billy effectually is always present, right? Instead of schools having a child with paperwork, that's usually a train wreck because the paperwork's never the child, right? I had a kiddo last weekend. His IEP eligibility was chromosomal deletion. What? Chromosomal deletion. So he has a very specific chromosomal deletion, but that's not the disability, right? How would I write specially designed instruction around that? And when they really partner with parents, and a lot of schools do, it's an easy load. What is it we need to do for him? And once the child also knows that everybody's on board, it's much easier to implement his IEP. And so that is the refreshing way that I've seen school districts really come up with creative ways to serve a kiddo, because then we have all the team members working together.
Absolutely. And I know that even, again, back when I was in the classroom days, calling parents like right in the beginning, right ahead of time, just to introduce myself. Even at the high school level, parents were surprised. They automatically thought their kiddo was in trouble.
What's wrong? Like, no, what's wrong?
Yeah, what's wrong? Why are you calling me? No. I just want to introduce you myself. And there's such an important factor to that of how you said that parents have to be involved. And, you know, and talking about the whole process and even the parent input statement of just having a conversation, a dialogue of working together in terms of how to support this student really makes the magic happen. Absolutely. And having everybody on the same page reduces that pushback that we see, unfortunately, more times than not.
Right, because we always say there's two sides of the table, and there's not. I think the IEP table should be a circle that we cut in half and shove against a wall and put mirrors up. There's just one side of the table. It's the child. And this myth that's been, you know, spoken forever, that there's two sides of the table. Wouldn't you want to know the person that has the most information? That's the parent, right? And I was doing a training recently in a district, and somebody raised their hand and she goes, I don't have time for that. And I said, this might not be the vocation for you, in my gentle way. Because if you don't have time for the person that has equal team membership, then there's no way to implement the IEP. And these are humans. This is not a checkbox. I could care less about compliance. How about caring? How about consideration? How about collaborating? When you're worried about compliance, you're in the wrong field.
That's right. I mean, our focus needs to be the child. It needs to be the support so that we can have this kiddo, again, you know, be the best version of themselves and future independence and employment and lifelong learning. And so that's certainly what we want from all of our students. What is faith?
What is faith? That's funny. Yes. I'm in the middle of a mastermind with some, I train people to become professional advocates. So FAPE is a free, appropriate public education. And the trick is that appropriate. So I live in the 5th Circuit Court, there are 11 circuit courts in America that determine sort of how they interpret the application of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And so depending on what circuit court you're in is going to determine what is a free appropriate public education. But it's supposed to be an education that allows a student equal access to the building, educational opportunities at no cost to the parents, which is kind of funny because there's always a cost, so that we can be more alike than not alike. And so what's appropriate in Texas as it relates to special education, probably going to look a little bit different than where it is in Pennsylvania. Based on funding, I live in the wonderful state of Texas. We rank 50th in special education delivery services out of 50. Now, I'm not really good with math. I only know tall, grande, and vente, but I think that's near the bottom. And so you're going to probably get a larger dose of FAPE when you live in a higher ranked state, but it's allowing that student to have access to the general education setting with supplementary aids and supports like their other students to mitigate the impact of their disability. I always say special education is like coaching. Both of my sons are athletes. Could we have just gone with the coaches at school? Yeah, but we got private coaching, right? And that's what I call special ed. It's just coaching that the general education teacher can't provide solely. And so that's my version of what is FAPE.
Excellent. Excellent. So how does that align then with our back to our original topic of teacher shortage?
So it has nothing to do with a teacher shortage. So the
That's right.
teacher shortage is like my natural hair color. It's not a thing, right? We didn't get a pass during Harvey. We're not going to get a pass during COVID. We're not going to get a pass. When you sign an IEP, it is a legal contract. At the very end of your IEP meeting, you know, somebody, the principal, who may or may not have been paying attention during the entire meeting, Mr. Bob, can you read the assurances? Oh, is it my turn? We assure you that blah, blah, blah. And we assure you, you know why they say that? It's a federal requirement because they receive federal funds. So I certainly understand less and more things go up and down, but my child and the children I advocate for absolutely are going to get the totality of their IEP because that's the way it has to be. These kiddos will not be employed. These kiddos will not be able to live on their own. These kiddos will not pursue further education, which is the three prongs of special education, right? We're preparing them for further education, gainful employment, and independent living. That's a charge that we have as public schools that receive federal funds. Not personal, it's business. So the conversation is not about shortage. The conversation is how can we more effectually implement the IEP? And the best way to do that is get some training to the school districts. It's quite simple if we teach teachers systems to better teach kiddos.
And I even, you know, for parents, again, to have parents involved, as a parent of a student that I've had to advocate for, my middle son is a brain cancer survivor, and I've had to advocate for his global needs. And, you know, my goal is that independence. And I have three boys, and my goal, frankly, for all three of them is independence, that they're not living in my basement. And so I think it's pretty straightforward, as you're saying, you know, I want them to be successful in life, whatever that is, whatever path that is for them, and to, you know, move out of my house at some point. And right. be gainful and life. And so I think as a parent, that should be even more so of the push for a parent to advocate their needs, advocate for their child, reach out to someone like yourself or myself to help with that if that's a concern, so that there is no question that this is my baby, this is our baby, and we've got to work together to make this happen.
Absolutely. And I also, you know, a general ed student, let's say I had three children, two were National Honor Society, and one was a resource special ed kiddo. They all gave me the same amount of gray hair. That, you know, the difference is if my daughter was missing 3 years of English, well, when she's 25, she could go take English online. I can't teach you these skills later in life. This is your only shot. And when I get clients and they have been in special ed for a while, and they realize the gravity of what they were talked into. And I say this respectfully, I have the gift of persuasion and I can make something sound amazing to you and I can make the same thing sound terrible. And parents have to step back. And if it's with a friend or somebody else, get somebody else to bounce it off of it. Does that sound right? Does that sound right that they just said a five-year-old with dyslexia won't graduate with their class? Does that sound right that they said, ooh, you don't want special ed, you don't want that label? Well, here's the good news. Packages have labels, children have eligibility. So I've been in public for a long time. I've never seen anybody walking down the street with a label on them. So we have to change what we think about special education. Sometimes we're not very far away from 1975 when this started. And it's just what kiddos need to be successful. And why wouldn't we give kiddos what they need to be successful? And my mission statement, when we get it right for the child, we get it right for everybody. Then it is a burden lifted for the teacher when these systems and processes and supports are working. It's a win for everybody.
Absolutely. What are top three things that parents should know about special education services and IEPs, but most of them don't?
That they are equal team members. They have no idea. Parents are, I love when I get a call and they go, well, Miss Cindy could only meet at 11:45 on Thursdays on leap year for the meeting. And what? No, it's their, you're the owner. It is your child. You're supposed to be doing one of three things. You're supposed to be part of the evaluation, IEP development, and placement decisions. And parents aren't. They go to the school, deer in headlights. Do you like this? Do you have any questions? Can you sign this? Anything else? All right, we have to go. I got to get my dog from the groomers. Okay, just sign here. Do you want a copy or email? And it's very clinical. Parents have no idea what's going on. And we just run them through. And so this is my child. I call special ed ER, right? It's emergency room. But I'm going to make sure that before we leave, whatever my child needed medically is going to be addressed. I'm going to make sure that my child's needs are addressed in the IEP. And parents don't know that they can table a meeting. They don't know that they're equal members. They don't know their legal options. They don't know their procedural rights. They don't know. And the procedural rights were set up to protect the individual with disability and the parents. And not only do school-based members have rarely even read the procedural rights, parents don't know what they are. I'm in one of 10 states where I'm allowed to represent families and due process, and I'm not a litigator. Parents have no idea what their rights are. When they find out later that they had some, it's devastating. This is what I say. You don't really have a right unless you know what it is and you invoke it, right? I always ask people, is it against the law to drive your car 90 miles an hour? No, it's against the law to get caught, right? And so, but we have to know what the laws are that protect the parents and the student. So the first thing parents have to do is they have to open up those procedural rights and read them because they're there for their protection. And once he's 18 and he leaves, it's over. Here's what I always say, you will never get time back, never. And we need to intervene for these kiddos immediately.
And I love that you mentioned procedural rights and safeguards because I was going to ask that question as a parent, you know, what are your rights? And I would encourage every parent to open it up and read it. And if they don't understand it, ask the questions and take the time. 100%. When should families seek help from an advocate or a lawyer?
Before you ever have a child. Is that too soon? No. So here's what I say. I pulled up on the great Google. It's about $900 to $2,500 a year for car maintenance, right? An advocate is an investment. You're going into arena that you're outnumbered. It's not what you do for a living. Special education is a beast. In Texas, we probably have 40 pages of regulations that come out with each legislative session. I do about 500 IEP meetings a year because I like to grind my teeth. I love kids and I love this space, but I'm forever learning. I probably spend a lot of money annually to go to law trainings and legal trainings. And if you don't know, you're going to get a vanilla IEP or you're going to be just kind of turned away. You need somebody to represent you because you're not in this space. And if you can't have that, then you need to be a robust learner of what your rights are. And your states have great trainings. All state websites, the DOE, the LEA, the SEA, have great resources on their state website. So either you become the advocate or you get an advocate. And so, you know, I always say when you go into court, you don't yell out, well, you shouldn't. Your attorney does. And they speak in a language you don't speak. Special ed is a unique language. As an advocate, I take parent passion, right? Thank goodness for the mute button. And I shift it into educational understanding. And there's a way to do that. But we all understand what the expectation is. And so parents are passionate and they're upset and they think something hasn't been done. Teachers think that you're telling them that they're a bad teacher when they've done everything that they can. And I'm there to go, let's all just catch, take a breath, get a snack. And that's not what's going on. Let's just relook at this. How can we best serve this child? And when you can have somebody help you in that process, it's going to be successful. When do you need a lawyer? You need a lawyer when you've exhausted all other remedies, right? A good advocate should be able to take you most of the way, but there are some times where there's nothing left to do except for legal representation. And I hope that you don't ever come to that, but that does happen sometimes.
And it's true. And I say this as well, just with my experience with my son, even having the training, you're coming from a place of fear and love. And so that conversation is very different than it is for somebody that when you're representing somebody's child, that you're able to then take that passion, like you said, take that fear, process it in a way and communicate it in a way that's clear and straightforward in the language that's needed. And it helps reduce that anxiety for that family.
And when I do trainings, I tell schools, you have to realize parents are always in trauma. And I have children, I have 3 children. You don't know what it's like to think about a child when you're not on the earth. You don't, whether it's dyslexia or the most intense comorbidities of disabilities. You don't know what that's like. And, you know, if you had somebody called in, your medical information came in and they said, hey, Wendy, you should probably come down when you see the doctor. There's a reason, you know why? Because when you're in trauma, you can't hear well, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have to give grace for parents for that. They are in trauma.
Speaking of grace, how can parents prepare for an IEP meeting?
Yeah, well, first, they need to be prepared for the IEP meeting. They need to get the draft ahead of time, right? I don't go to a meeting and not be prepared. So I'm going to have last year's IEP, and have that printed out, and I'm going to ask the school, please provide me a full draft copy of the IEP, knowing that it's just a draft, so that I can prepare. Without that draft, it's unlikely I'll be able to make an informed decision and we'll have to reschedule, right? Because I'm going to have a question about every single page. It's your time. It's your meeting. You can stop the meeting. You can reschedule. We're going to finish it. I don't know how long it's going to take, but it's for an entire instructional year. We're going to get that right. We're not going to be rushed through. So when most people sit in an IEP meeting, somebody projects something, they're all looking at their laptop. Do you have any questions? You've come to somebody else's party and you feel like an outsider. You always tell when I train school districts, I say, here's the thing. When the parent walks in, you should all stand up and say, which seat would you like? We don't do that, right? Give us the worst seat, the projector's in my left eye, the chair wobbles, right? And then when we walk in, everybody stops talking. Well, no wonder parents don't feel comfortable. So it's not a secret. There's nothing to hide from. Well, that's predetermination, Karen. We can't give you that. No, I said in my email, knowing that this is just a draft, if I sold you a house, Wendy, and said, oh my gosh, it's $500,000, you're going to love it. And you said, well, can I see it first? I mean, Wendy, it's got a door and everything. No, but if I could just see it, oh, you're going to like it. That's what it's like for parents. And right. Sign here. No, I'm not going to sign here. I want to make sure that we got the whole thing right. If the paperwork's not right, I can't expect for anybody to implement it, right? And the child's never paperwork, so it has to be three things. It has to be pristine, prescriptive, and puffy. If it's not those things, you're not finished.
So what are some common IEP special education myths that parents don't know about?
Anytime somebody says we have to, or that's a law, you can just make sure that's not true. We have to, not a thing. So the myth is, because they told it to you, it's true. I believe when school-based members tell us something, they really do believe it because of the person they got the information from. So this is what I say. Great, Wendy, that doesn't sound right to me, but if you could provide that to me in writing by close of business. The old COB stops everything. Miss Cunningham. That's why it's Mayor Cunningham. Anyway, Miss Cunningham, it doesn't have to be like this. Oh, well, I thought you said it was a law. Well, it's what we do here. I said, so if it's a law or policy, I could print it out on a Xerox machine. But if it's a practice, it's just something that you're choosing to do, but it's not the law. And the big myth is that they've had legal training and what they're telling you is legal. And that, my friend, includes if a school district attorney is sitting in the room. So you don't know your rights, but you can sit there, which is why I love Zoom, and say, hey, Wendy, you're the sped lead. Would you just email me that law? Because I haven't seen it yet. Okay, well, it's not a law. Super. It's just an opinion. It's a practice. But it's not the law. The great thing about the law is it's barely moved since 1975. So unless you had a secret session with somebody that I missed, I'm going to need you to email me that. And the other myth is you get what you get and you can't throw a fit. You absolutely can throw a grown-up fit. And there's a way to do it effectively. Do I need to go stand for 180 seconds at the school board? I don't think that's very effective. But the myth is that whatever they said at the table, you have to stick with. No, you can go up. You can go to the principal. You can go to the special ed director. You can go to the director of education. You can go to an assistant superintendent. There almost always is somebody in the district that will listen to you and help you. It may not be at the IEP table the first time you're there.
So we talked about special education, and part of that is specially designed instruction. Who can deliver specially designed instruction?
I think Amazon can deliver it, FedEx, and UPS. Yes. So SDI, I love when people tell me, specially designed instruction is special and it's instruction. There's a clue, right? Can somebody else other than special education teacher or the related service provider provide specially designed instruction? Absolutely. After the initial instruction is delivered by the special education personnel and they've been trained on the unique needs of the student with the disability. So one of the things parents need to lean into is when you have two teachers in a class, you think that one of them is a special education teacher. Well, we have a great thing called the interweb. So I'm gonna say, Wendy, can you tell me your second teacher's name? Oh, Mrs. T. I'm like, is that T-E-E? Or is there four E's? Oh, well, could you give me her full name? Oh, I would have to look it up. Okay. And you get both of those teachers' names and you as the parent look up on the state's website. Are they an aide? Are they a level 2 aide? Are they an ESL teacher? Are they a special education teacher? Good news is they either are or aren't. So one of the first things I would do with your IEP is to go and see if there is somebody actually delivering specially designed instruction because they're the ones trained to mitigate the impact of the child's disability.
And how would a parent monitor if their student is receiving that service?
So how would they monitor? They're going to first of all, let those people know at the beginning of the school year, I'm related service provider and special education teacher. I'm going to be picking up the raw data, RDCS, raw data collection.
That's back to data.
Yeah. There's only one data.
It didn't happen.
Yeah. So we educate based on one word, data, period. And you either have the data, and this is what I say to parents. If it wouldn't be evidence in a court case, it didn't happen. And we've seen lots of court cases, and we have, he did that, she did that, and one video with the cabinets, right? But if it's not an exhibit and I can't graph it, it didn't happen. It just did not happen. And if it didn't happen, then I'm going to have to look at ways to exercise my dispute resolution options, because he's going to be implemented his IEP. So that's how you know it's being delivered. And you know, you can set up a conference with a related service provider. You can set up a conference with a special education teacher. What do you do to help Cindy? Because she has a disability in basic reading. Do you know what that means? Yeah, she basically can't read. That's what I had somebody say to me in a due process when I was direct examining them.
Stop.
Yes. No. Stop. I can send you the transcript. She basically can't read. Yeah. I said, so what strategies do you help her with her fluency? I read to her. So you know what? People are very open. Ask them, Mindy, since you're the special ed teacher, what strategies are you using to help Billy with math? And the reason I want to know is so I can replicate them. And if she says, I walk by his desk and tap the table to get back to work, that's a concern. And a concern requires an IEP meeting.
I'm cringing and laughing because it all is.
Well, and Mindy, most parents have never even, they don't even know who the speech teacher is. And that onus is on the parent, respectfully. It is. It is your job. I promise you, I knew who the band director was and the football coach was because they're teaching my child. You need to go in there and see who's providing an educational product to your cherub and then partner with them in their milk chocolate, dark chocolate, Funyuns, Red Bull, whatever you need so that we can be team kiddo.
Absolutely. How do you suggest the best way to communicate then to your child's teacher or therapist?
With noise coming out of your mouth. The worst way to communicate is by typing. You know, in my trainings, no matter how long this earth is here, this will always be a belly to belly world. I'm going to say, you know, Wendy, I made these cookies for you. They're full of gluten. You're going to love them. It's nice to meet you. Thank you for serving my kiddo. If there's anything I can do, except for laminating, I can't stand burning plastic. I want to do it. Provide yourself as a service to the school-based members. You make that a community. You make that relationship because they're going to be respectful of you and knowing that you're involved and want to partner with you. But it's a belly-to-belly world. Teachers probably get 8 million, you know, I pay your paycheck. You work for me. It's my tax dollars. We have to stop doing that. No, anybody that would take a bunch of children that don't belong to them, that's not a tax write-off, I think they're miracle workers, right? So we need to honor the staff and partner with them.
Are there any resources that you can recommend to parents to help them navigate the special ed system?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many special ed websites, which are really good. But of course, you have to remember that when you get into parent, you know, chat rooms or Facebook groups, that anybody can complain, right? You want to look for people that are raining, not complaining. But Pete Wright, Wright's Law, has some amazing books. One of the best books I ever read by him, From Emotions to Advocacy. Because if you're emotional, it's going to be hard for you to have a successful IEP meeting. Right?
That's right.
And that was a great starter book for me to read. There's many websites, understood.org. Your state has great websites and resources, and they have videos. I live for a video. Look on YouTube. There are products out there to serve you so parents can get that knowledge.
As we kind of wind down, what should I have asked that I didn't know enough to ask from you?
Where do you get this hair color? No, what you should ask is how do we keep equipping parents? How do we keep giving them hope? And it's what I tell parents every day. You're doing a great job. Your kiddo's not broke. Nobody's broke. We're not trying to fix him. You didn't do anything wrong. You weren't a bad parent. We just have an identified deficit that we need to work on. The good news about special ed is we identify deficits that another kiddo who's masking might have had, but they'll never learn those strategies. Parents are doing a great job. Teachers are doing an amazing job. Administrators are doing a great job. We're all doing a good job. We're all on the same team. It's about the student. And we're going to continue to get it right. We're going to continue to work through this process. You know, one of the reasons I started the Academy was a couple years ago, we had this little thing called COVID in March of 2020. And I put on concealer and new lipstick at 9 o'clock at night and had some very unattractive lighting. And I said, this is not true. And started doing, you know, online lives. And it birthed Special Education Academy. And probably 60% of the people on the Academy are school-based members. Everybody does want to learn. Everybody does want to serve your kiddo. We are the same team. And if you can reframe that, even though you sat in a meeting with somebody that had a stink face, sometimes they have a stink face because they weren't planning on being in a meeting. They were planning on teaching, right? And we have to all stop judging each other. And she doesn't like me. She doesn't like the child. And just take a breath, etch a sketch, and get her, roll our sleeves up and get back in there and work for that kiddo.
So how can people find you?
It's a lot of fun. So I'm Special Education Boss or Special Education Academy. We're on all the platforms. We have a great YouTube channel where we put up trainings there so teachers can watch them anywhere. You know, our heart is to serve people. We do everything from training in school, teacher development, to training parents, to training people to become advocates, because we're all advocates. Everybody at the table is an advocate for the child. And we train solely on the law. We have the academy that meets once a week for about 2 hours until it goes 3 hours. There's hundreds of hours on the academy that are archived with workbooks. It's $47 a month. Stay as long as you want, leave when you want. But people don't have they don't have enough information to navigate the system. And what parents have to remember, although they know, is that every year you got to tell your story. Oh, you go back to the starting line. And so you need to have real information that comes, that's legal, not what somebody told you in the football stands, but real information so that you can get to work and serve your child with a disability so they can be successful adults. Yeah. So we love families. We love parents, teachers, everyone. So if you're a human on the planet, you're not a human, it doesn't apply to you, but if you're a human on the planet and you watch this podcast, just email us at admin@specialeducationacademy.com and we will give you a month's membership to the academy so you can get fully equipped to serve children with disabilities.
I have goosebumps. That is very generous of you. And I hope people take you up on that offer. I really do, because that is an incredible gift for you to share with folks. So thank you for that. Absolutely. Yay. Incredibly empowering. And I love that you have made this conversation fun and funny. Yeah. And you make it available in terms of parents wanting and feeling like they can do this. So if you could put one thing on a billboard or one tip on a billboard for parents, what would it be and why? Final question.
Yeah, it would be IEP stands for I expect progress. And I expect progress from everybody. I expect progress from the parents, from the professionals, from the staff, and from the student. Is that I expect progress from all of us so this kiddo can win.
Amazing. 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 On that note, I appreciate our conversation and I thank you for your time and sharing your space with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You bet.
Thank you for joining us today for our Special Ed Strategist podcast. To hear more pro tips and find additional IEP essentials, including our IEP webinar, please visit www.learningessentialsedu.com.